This is Circulating Ideas. I'm Steve Thomas. This episode is a special collaboration with the Lit Tech Podcast, and we wanted to get together to talk about the state of the MLS. So their hosts, Emily and Addie and I, put together a panel, and we hope you enjoy our discussion.
Thompson, the Learning Technologies Librarian at SUNY Oswego in Oswego, New York.
I'm Addie Madison. I'm the Media Specialist at White River Elementary School in Noblesville, Indiana.
I'm Steve Thomas. I'm an Assistant Branch Manager at Gwinnett County Public Library outside Atlanta.
I'm David Lankus. I'm a professor at Syracuse University School of Information Studies.
I'm Jill Hurst-Wall. I'm an Assistant Professor of Practice in Syracuse University School of Information Studies, and that really should be Associate Professor of Practice, because that's who I am. And I'm the Director of the Library and Information Science Program.
And I'm Corey. I'm a school media specialist at a high school here in Keene, Texas.
Great. Well, thank you all for joining us. And we're going to talk about this very noisy editorial that was in Library Journal this month. Steve, you want to tell us a little bit about the Library Journal?
Sure. It was called Can We Talk About the MLS? And it was by Michael Kelly, the editor-in-chief of Library Journal. And it's basically, so this topic has been coming up over and over again in some of our pre-show stuff. David mentioned that he's been talking about this since the 90s, that this is sort of something that's always been going on in librarianship, this conversation. And his view, Michael's view, is that perhaps librarianship would benefit more from having an apprenticeship program more than a master's degree program. And I think that is basically the theme of the editorial. Does anybody disagree with that? That's kind of what it's saying?
In a nutshell.
But and so there's been a lot of talk about that because not everyone agrees with that. Some people think it goes too far. Some people think it doesn't go far enough. Some people like the master's degree program. Some people think the master's degree program is not any good at all and should be tossed out completely. But it sounds, I think, of this group and of other groups that we've read a couple of things, one thing in Publishers Weekly. There's been tons of people have been blogging about it. And so, but there's a lot of good conversation going on about this. I don't think anybody disagrees that there's some, you can always make things better. So we just wanted to get all of this group together to talk about the current state of the MLS and how we can improve that and things like that.
So I guess the question for all of us here is, all of us except for Corey have an MLS, and Corey, you're working towards one, correct?
That's correct.
Yeah. So why did we go get it?
Actually, to be fair, I actually have a master's in telecommunication and a PhD in information transfer.
Oh.
Yes.
Teach me to do my research before we start the podcast.
No, that's okay, because actually it's somewhat interesting. I mean, I'm a certified public librarian in the state of New York because I have a post-baccalaureate, a master's, a graduate degree in library and information science. But it's a discussion that's near and dear to my heart because there are multiple ways into the profession. So I don't pick that out to be picky. I just want to, there's a perspective here.
And I think that's a valid point.
And that's one question that a lot of people have is one of the blog posts that we talked about was on Andy Woodworth's Agnostic Maybe blog, was saying they're basically getting their MLS because they have to get a job. They feel like they can learn everything that they need to learn without the degree. What do people think about that?
So this is Jill. I grew up wanting to be a librarian and worked in my elementary, junior high, senior high, college libraries, took 2 years off, then went and got my library degree, and then went into IT for 5 years before becoming a corporate librarian. And even though I'd had all that library experience, and I had run libraries when the librarian was out, and I had worked in cataloging departments and all the different things I'd done, I really didn't know what a library was until I went to the master's program. And I think that degree has served me well over time. I have had my degree for quite a long time. But and so I always think about what you miss, what you would miss, and the way I've been thinking about the conversation in the last week is, what would our communities miss if we didn't have people with an MLS degree?
Addie, what did you want to say?
I was just going to say, I actually had a conversation similar to this with some other school librarians recently about how I went into the library program because I had to, because I wanted to be a librarian, and you have to have a master's degree to do it. But I would have felt like I missed a lot if I hadn't gone through our program. A lot of collaboration with librarians in so many different areas, relationships that I still have and that they still serve me well, and just a direction and a focus for where I want my career to go and what that career should look like in the future that I wouldn't have had if I hadn't been in that program.
Corey?
Well, I was going to say, you know, I wasn't excited about going back to school for my master's. When I was done with my undergraduate, I wanted to be done forever. But I think in a school library setting, I don't know about you guys, but I'm the only librarian at my school. And so I end up having to know everything about everything for the school setting. And that's not something I could just pick up by dropping into the library there, you know?
Definitely. And I also find being the only school librarian in my building, I'm the only person in my building that thinks like a librarian. And sometimes thinking like a librarian is in direct contrast with the people who think like teachers. And I have to stick up for my library every once in a while. And I know that my district has some teachers who have been made into media specialists, but they don't have that MLS degree. And they're still thinking like teachers, so their collection doesn't look the way mine does, and it's not going the direction mine is. And for better or for worse, that's just the way it is.
And I think I would argue that I think that that's a good reason to, I think, have the degree as a school librarian, because you need somebody like that.
You know, it's interesting. One of the things that I took out of the editorial was this notion of mentorship or apprenticeship model. And I think there are two very important points. A lot of the editorial and phrasing was, I got the MLS because I had to. And one of the things that I can say is, I think that even up this past week, this has been a healthier discussion, because I take from that editorial a desire for a conversation, for a discussion. Is one, here we are, practitioners and educators together. And two, you know, but I said I was having these conversations in the 90s. They tended to be those damn MLS programs. Anyway, those programs, you know, versus the practitioners. And, you know, it was us versus them. And Ken Haycock, actually, on the panel we did in 2006 or 90, actually, was it 96? When was it? 2006. Reminded me that, you know, we follow, as library science programs, accreditation. And accreditation is set by the American Library Association, which is the association of the profession. So that in essence, the profession can really guide where we want. If we want to extend and talk about more, you know, librarianship through library science program, master, undergraduate, PhD, you know, apprenticeship and such, that really should be an open conversation for us all to have. I personally have a problem with the apprenticeship soul model. I have a very quick story, and then I promise I'll be quiet. I was in Florence at the Academy of Art. This is where the David is, and it's beautiful. And I was looking around and marveling at all the wonderful marble. And I snuck into a tour group that was going into this, like, sealed-off room. And luckily, they were speaking English. And the room is just this huge, you know, five-story high, 100-foot-long room. And it has these shelves, and shelves upon shelves upon shelves along the wall. And on them are these marble busts. And, you know, figurines and heads. And the tour guide said, well, the ones at the bottom are the ones done by the masters. And the ones above it are the students. And it isn't until you cannot tell the difference between the two that they can graduate. I thought, well, that's really interesting. And then as she goes on, she goes, and this is the problem with Italian art. And I thought, a problem with Italian art? These beautiful, gorgeous sculptures and such. And the answer was because they could only get as good as the master. And they couldn't do different from the master. And they couldn't try something else because they had to replicate it. And so one of the potential, not guaranteed, but potential downfalls of apprenticeships is you're only going to be as good as the master. And that can lead to stagnation within a field.
That's a very good point, because we kind of think like the people we learn from. And Addie and I both went to Michigan, and the thing that I find is growing to be interesting about Michigan is it's one of the few library school programs with no online classes. And
it's true.
Part of the advantage of being in library school was the conversations that you'd have in the lounge, particularly since Michigan's an iSchool, so you've got the librarians thrown in there with the human-computer interaction people and the information analysis and retrieval people and the archivists, and we'd all sit there and have lunch together. And so those conversations were possibly one of the most valuable things I got out of library school. And
definitely.
You don't necessarily get those from an apprenticeship where you have to do as you're told.
And now, of course, I think there's a chance that, you know, in some programs, the professors haven't been out there doing library work lately, and you might get stagnation there as much as you would from learning from someone who's currently working.
Yeah, I think that argues more from, like, I mean, a collaborative point of view. I mean, that the you don't want the academic professors there just kind of in their little, you know, the stereotypical ivory tower kind of thing of not paying attention to the real world, but then you also don't want to be completely divorced from that larger theory either.
Jill, did you have something?
So that's why professors are supposed to do research. You hope that their research draws them back into libraries and back into dealing with users, patrons, members, whatever you want to call them, and think about how to move the profession forward. I'm a professor of practice, so I'm charged with staying connected to practice. That doesn't necessarily mean doing research, but still I have to keep that connection. And I recognize, and I think students recognize, if you don't keep those connections alive, you become stale. And I think they hear that. You know, they can sense the difference between someone who has kept connections alive in some form or another and those who haven't.
Yeah, as I totally agree with that. I believe one of the articles we're looking at, and this is what I was, the guy was complaining that his tech classes were very low level and kind of out of date. And I know I've had that experience, like web design classes and stuff that aren't really current. And so I can understand where they're coming from, where it'd be better to have real world experience in some of those areas that move really, really fast.
Okay, that's one of those things that, I mean, I think it's almost a different problem because, I mean it's almost a different issue because that's sort of a, that particular program is maybe not doing what it should be doing. I mean, because, no, you should not be learning out-of-date things, especially in a technology-rich profession like ours. But that doesn't really say anything to, I mean, that may be, that school should update that class.
Yeah. Well, but there's differences in the different programs. I mean, you know, we're going to find everything from focus on research and they're too busy worrying about their research to they don't do any and they're stagnant in the field. I mean, that's the nature of the fact that these are human beings that are in charge of education. The one thing that is interesting, I think all programs have to reflect and change, and I face this and Jill's facing this. We had students coming to us and saying, we're not getting X, Y, or Z. And what's very interesting is in the past, that would be, and it's your fault, and fix it, and if you don't, I'm grumpy. And increasingly what it is students coming together saying, you're not teaching X, Y, or Z, so we're going to arrange for that to be taught, or we're going to teach ourselves. And one of the things that we've had to do as a program, and I think increasingly higher ed has to learn to shape, is these students are going to be doing a lot of educating of themselves, and we need to recognize it, credential it to a degree, and be much more flexible, because we have systems like, well, I want to introduce this course. Well, it's got to go through the curriculum committee to the faculty senate, and the faculty senate has, oh, and it's got to be a curriculum change, and that's ALA every 7 years, and this idea of becoming more nimble, regardless of whether we move to apprenticeship models or whether we stay in the higher education, graduate or undergraduate, we have to be more nimble in how we prepare librarians, and we have to stop pretending they need to know with their career in 2.5 years at the beginning of it.
Addie, what did you have to say? Very good point, David. Exactly.
Yes. I was just going to add to that that I think we saw some of that happening when we were at Michigan, when we were at SI, just courses changing, even between when I took a course, I can't even remember which one it was, though. I took a course with one of the older professors that was on her way out, and Emily took it with a new professor on her way in, and it was this vast difference, the professional practices class. And just bringing in new ideas and letting the students ask for what they need, because, you know, it looks different right now than it did 5 years ago being a librarian, and it will look completely different 5 years from now. And I think that the students coming into this profession are coming into it because it changes fast.
So I have a question. There's different pressures on higher education, and one of the pressures on higher education is the fact that any industry can look at higher ed and say, we don't value that, and so we're no longer going to require the degree. So we have people saying that you don't need a degree, or you shouldn't need a degree to work in a library. What's stopping them from now posting jobs that don't require the degree? And I'm asking that because they could fix their own problem.
Right. I think that this is a really interesting point because, like, SUNY Oswego is having a lot of retirements. So we're a hiring librarian right now. And, of course, the librarians are the ones that write the job descriptions. So the librarians have the ability to say, we want someone with an MLS. But I remember watching at Michigan that they were hiring people who just had a master's degree in whoever they were, whatever area they were going to specialize in, which I found, as someone working through the library program, frustrating that they weren't supporting their own graduates. But you do start to see this around academic librarianship, and we'll get into it a little bit more. But the school libraries in a number of states, the ship has sailed. So it's a really interesting thing to think about.
I've been looking at a lot of jobs, basically, for libraries, and it seems like the newer positions in the libraries, they're having a lot more flexibility with whether or not they want an MLS, like community outreach and literacy outreach, and some of these positions that are just picking up steam in public libraries, they're wanting someone with experience, but not necessarily the degree.
Interesting. Steve?
Well, I wanted to sort of come off that discussion and make it a little bit more. And as David said, he doesn't have an MLS. We all know good librarians who don't have them. Buffy Hamilton is a good example as well. What is, if you don't need the MLS to be a great librarian, what is the intrinsic value of the MLS? Like, if you can learn those values outside the program, explain to people then why they need that program.
You know, I think of sort of three ways of becoming a librarian, right? First of all, I think that there is a core skill, a core value, and a core mission that is what makes a librarian, right? It's not a degree. That's back to the sort of broad strokes too easy. You don't become a librarian because you have a degree. I mean, you can get a job as a librarian because you have a degree. But right. To me, there's something deeper. I mean, that's my whole spiel. But so the three ways I see it is, one, you can get hired as one, which is what we're seeing with a lot of the school librarians. Well put. That ship has sailed. And what's interesting is when you lose that requirement of needing a librarian with some sort of certification professional behind it, not only do you begin to lose those positions for people who are trained for those, and sort of political clout that comes with it. It's hard for school librarians to fight against the trend when people are sort of, you know, adding to your ranks people who don't get it and necessarily want to get it. The second way is you can get it, so you can be hired for it, you can get it because you're educated for it, or you can get it because you sort of have the spirit favorite of. In other words, you sort of get adopted in. I've known many people who are brilliant librarians who never have the degree, but they, I love it, it was put earlier, think like a librarian. And I think we need to recognize all of those and cast a broader net for it. I mean, the worst thing that we can do is find someone who's absolutely brilliant and say, you're not allowed in the washroom. We tried that. And what we ended up with was a lot of stagnant libraries with a lot of tiered systems.
And that's the end of the discussion for this episode. Make sure you listen to Lit Tech number 80 for the conclusion of our talk, where we talk a little more specifically about school librarians. Thanks, Emily and Addie, for helping put together the episode. And thanks to Corey, David, and Jill for participating. If you'd like to learn more about the podcast, you can visit circulatingideas.com. Or you can follow the show on Twitter at @CircIdeas or on Tumblr at circulatingideas.tumblr.com. You can also like the show on Facebook at facebook.com/circulatingideas. And if you have comments, questions, or suggestions for future interviews, you can contact the show at circulatingideas.mail@gmail.com. Music is by Pamela Klicka. Thank you for listening, and I hope you'll join me again next time.